Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your guest's host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. Today, we have a wonderful guest on the show. Alex Paknadel is on the show today. He's a writer for so many different things, Marvel, indie comics, all sorts of jazz, doing his own thing, too, which is awesome. But Alex on the show today, we talk many things, including creativity as therapy, using trauma and everything else to make a better world with the power of creativity, as well as, you know, of course, animal stuff and whatnot, as well as per usual and such too. And I mean, just all sorts of things like that, like where we find tranquility and peacefulness as a creative and putting it back out there in the world through our work and such like that. It's wonderful, wonderful talk. And you learn a few things about the history of comics and such that I never knew about, and also a lot more and more. So hopefully you guys enjoy this episode today. If you want, subscribe wherever you guys are listening to podcasts, you know, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, comicchronicle.podbean.com. Of course, though, we have a YouTube page, Dakota Morgan on YouTube, where I do video games, post older episodes of the podcast for people to catch up on, you know, also as well as dinosaur content on there, toy content on there too, you know, a little bit of science stuff as well. So that's the YouTube page. And if you want to catch me live, raw, and uncut, I am on Twitch, CodaRex. 97 on Twitch, Twitter at DakotaMorgan3, and then Instagram at Dakota_Morgan97 if you want to follow along for all the animal adventures I do, comic book stuff, and other weird shenanigans and crap like that. Yeah, but there's plenty of avenues for you guys to stay in touch with the podcast as well, too, my social media as well. And without me rambling on anymore, though, let's get on to my talk with Alex. That was weird.
Yeah, I think it was like it was the moment you started recording.
Yeah, it was a very weird... hey, we started talking about not drinking tap water. This is what happened. Then
It was Bill Gates, man.
Oh, he knew. He's like, uh-oh, they're going to go talk about Flint, Michigan again. Here we go. we can't do that. Oh, my God.
Where are you based, man?
Oh, I'm based in Phoenix, Arizona, actually.
Oh. Thank you for finding the time for the call, man. Like, what time is it for you?
9:24 right now.
Ouch. All right.
No, hey, you know what? It's perfectly fine. I've had to do meetings. I've done interviews for the show before and whatnot, but like I've had to do them on the podcast and other stuff. What was the earliest time I've ever gotten up and doing? Oh, I've gotten up at 1:30 to do one at 2:00.
That's suboptimal.
AM, by the way.
Yeah, no, I got that. That's a whole fistful of ugly.
Oh, that was, I had my coffee ready to brew. That was it was also a meeting for a project. So I was like, okay, I don't have to have audio on or a video camera on, so they'll never know I'm in my boxers fresh out of fucking bed with a cup of coffee, and they're gonna like, so how are you looking, Dakota? Well, you know, I look like shit. What did you expect? It's 2 a.m., I'm here. Ooh, let's get talking for this book. Because fuck. Oh my God. And there was one, like, I was doing early in the morning. He couldn't, it was a guy, he couldn't do it. He was in Europe as well. Not the UK, it was somewhere in Europe. It was a couple years ago. He's like, it was way early in the morning for me, but then it was like a 10 to 14 hour time difference or something like that. And he said, oh yeah, I'm going to be going to the club later on. I'm like, oh, fantastic. I am going to be going back to bed because it's like 3 a.m. for me, my friend.
Yep. Global coordination. Rough.
Well, the thing is, might
come back at any moment. So I do apologize if you start hearing the clattering of, broom handles and various kind of cutlery.
Hey, we've had one time where there's been a gunshot on the recordings. I shit you not.
Like a gun?
Yeah. It was somebody who was like in a neighborhood or trying to remember vaguely. It's a memory. It's one of those memories that you just get randomly when you're talking about a thing. But I remember, I think it was like 3 years ago because the show's been around for almost four. Really early on in the show. And this person was in a not-so-safe neighborhood or something like that, and, like, a gunshot went off because I think there was, like, a party going on or a team won a sports game or something like that. And I was like, is that a gun? And they're like, yeah, no, just partying down the road. I'm like, I hope to God that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, and I asked, I was like, are you there? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, thank God no one just came in and murdered you because that would have been hell.
Again, suboptimal.
Yeah. Oh, definition. The definition.
Yeah, 100%.
Have you ever had that? Huh?
Textbook.
Oh, textbook, 100%. But I mean, have you, you've had to run into it? You're a big professional, though, with comics and such like that. You've had to run into something like that. Like, not the gunshot on a phone call or script call. Not that. But meaning, like early phone call, like the meetings and such like that, where you're like, oh, my God, I got to get up early for this.
No, because, like, they're really? Usually I've had one or two, but they've mainly been kind of super accommodating. I think just because I exude, like, pathetic, I guess. So, like, maybe they just sort of, you know, they hear my voice and just think, no, this guy can't handle, like, a 2 a.m. phone call. We'll let him have his Bircher muesli and his coffee and crack on. So, yeah, tech tends to sort of take out quite well.
I don't know. I would say your voice is pretty more professional, though. It's, I would be like, this guy has his shit together more than I do and ever will.
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah, but, like, that's the beauty of icebergs, right?
Oh, that's fair. Yeah.
I'm not wearing pants.
Hey. Hey, if it's fairness, I look like I'm dressed in, like, my uniform, ready to go, because I'm going on a wildlife sanctuary after this, my friend. So I'm, like, I'm ready to A-OK on that.
That's a, like, so this is in Arizona?
Yes.
What would one see on one of those in your part of the world?
See, that's where it gets different. I mean, I've talked about it numerous times on the show, when I'm not making comic books or doing this podcast, I'm working at an exotic animal hospital or a fucking wildlife sanctuary. But the thing is, like, we take in rescues from other stuff. So, like, we've also...
You could do, like, anything you want to anyone and still get into heaven, basically.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know. I would hope so.
But, you have a license, basically. Like, you're just an intrinsically decent human being. Like, yeah, there it is. Steal a car. Do it now.
I don't know. I've lit a car on fire. Does that count? I don't know. See, like, delinquent days here, my good man. That, like, the days before I got into this field, I don't know about that. Like, they're like,
saving one life at a time.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, I was looking at it, like, people. There was a doctor friend of mine, Dr. Ruff. She called Arizona the Australia of the United States, and she's not wrong in the slightest about that.
Is that in the sense that, like, absolutely everything wants to eat or kill you?
Including the plants, yes.
I remember seeing, like, an interview with Ray Winstone after he just filmed The Proposition, like, that amazing Australian Western by, like, Nick Cave and, you know, the one with Guy Pearce and... But, like, Ray Winstone had filmed this Western in Australia, you know, because they're pretty good. They make pretty good Westerns. And he said that his biplane landed in the outback, and he got off and he just looked, and there was a snake trying to eat the plane. And he was like, I'm not comfortable with this. This isn't good.
That's the most amazing thing I've ever heard.
I just get my head around stuff like, oh, I've trod on a rock. Oh, no, it turns out, like, it's a venomous lizard. Like, that wasn't
Like, Australia, we come in, like, second place to Australia, but because Australia gets bigger things and they have more, they have crocodiles and alligators. Like, I have, like, 40-something crocodile and alligators I care for at the sanctuary, but that's because they were illegally had, and so we're, like, a rescue sort of thing. So we're that, but, like, Australia, everything that's just native wildlife there just really wants to kill you. And I love Australia, but still, like, the thing is around Arizona is that we have, like, 30 to 40 different types of rattlesnakes. The trees have thorns that are, like, 2 to 3 inches long, and there's cactus everywhere. Then you got lizards that are really cool beaded lizards that are called Gila monsters that are venomous. Then you got scorpions. Then you got spiders. Tarantulas, like, all this stuff like that. Like, we're, like, the tame version of Australia, if there was ever a thing.
So when are you moving to Vermont?
I thought about it.
I come from Illinois, like Chicago. Oh, really? Yeah, that's the thing. Like 16 years born and raised there. You know, I grew up there where it's like city and then cornfields. And I moved out to Arizona and I'm like, wildlife is great. The next thing you know, I work with wildlife and make comic books. Like it's a whole thing and a half. Like, and then, yeah, I don't know. I thought about it. Like, I'm like, you know what? In my older years, I feel like I could just work at a zoo, but work in some place where it snows. So it would be, and I don't mind staying in for the winter.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, can I ask regarding Arizona? You know, as an off-comer, as a blow-in, is it Arizonians? What's the point of
to me, as a guy who was never born and raised, I call them dumbasses. But so, to be honest, but it is Arizonians. It is it's Arizonians.
Do they have the same like really kind of insouciant kind of laid back attitude to all of these deadly things that you get like in Australia? Like, because immediately brings to mind for me is always like Florida. You know what I mean? Like in Florida, like if someone loses a cigarette like in an alligator's mouth, like they'll reach in to get it. Like it's not a thing. Like they haven't just like it's like, dude, you've just reached into the digestive system of a or like what are you doing? But like they're so hard, like they're so strong, like it doesn't matter. Are Arizonians like that with all the kind of rattlesnakes and stuff?
It's a small percentage, and I think that percentage is growing smaller because like Arizona is a retirement state, is the thing. So like a lot of them are older folk here that move down or they come here. We call them snowbirds. There are people who move down or just come down for the winter. So they're older folk who are like, I don't want to deal with the winter time in the U.S. or even out of the country. They come down and we call them snowbirds and they're just all over the place and shit. But like, so there's a lot of those. There's a lot of people moving in from out of state who've never had to deal with anything like that. So it's a lot of the percentage of people here are like, I want nothing to do with it. And then there's a percentage of people like me who live here that love the stuff that's like, this stuff is here before you, friends. Like, you got to worry about these wild pigs with giant tusks. Like, you got to, like, these were here way before you, and they're going to be here way after. Like, they're like, oh, you got to start an exterminator company. I'm like, no, you don't. Like, people are like, oh, it's a thing. Most people around here will say the only good rattlesnake is the dead rattlesnake, which I hate that saying, but yeah, it's weird. People in Australia are a lot more chill with the animals, and Florida a lot more relaxed. But then when it comes to Arizona, people are like, no, we want nothing to do with it. But then they move here. So you move literally into their territory. So I don't understand that.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like a non-human ontology that one has to kind of consider, like in the sense that, like, I go out to Turkey a bunch just because of like my mom.
Yeah.
And there's a place we tend to go in like central Anatolia. Called Cappadocia, which is like riddled with scorpions. Which for me sucks because like, I mean, I'm not good with that. And like, I carry like a UV golf torch with me everywhere. Cause you know, they have like, they show up under black light.
Oh yeah.
But then there is that always that thing that where I was kind of asked about it, where I was talking to a friend about it, who said that like, she got stung like a bunch of times, like on the foot. And I was going, oh my God. So like, you freaked out. And she was like, no, because I moved into their territory. They didn't move into mine.
Exactly. Exactly.
You want to live in a sort of arid climate, you pay the toll. Like, and that's it.
Yeah, if you want to live someplace where like you got coyotes and wolves and deer and there's some bears every now and then, but then there's some center. But then if you're in like the city or suburbs in the middle of winter, then you know you're not gonna get much. Like, you're not really. It's, I don't know. It's a whole thing and a half. Like, it's really weird. It's really weird. But I've said it numerous times on the show before. Like, doing this stuff and then also working in comics, like, it honestly helps the creativity so damn much.
I can imagine.
Yeah, like it's...
Tired of biased mainstream media? Just want the news without agenda? Well, stop on by America First Podcast. We report every Sunday on the events that took place during the week. No bias, no agenda, just the news as it was meant to be. You can find us on Spotify, Anchor, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addict, AntennaPod, and Overcast. Tune in and stay up to date. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at capital S, lowercase CMBAG, capital N. Just look for, type in America First Podcast. We're there. Got plenty of episodes for now. We update regularly, as I said. So stay up to date to know what's going on. And as always, stay informed, stay involved, and keep America first.
Whoops, sorry. Did I lose you?
No, not at all.
Oh, I got scared. I was like, uh-oh. Like, oh, no. But yeah, no, it is a thing. Like, it helps the creativity. I mean, what is it, like, some of the things maybe you do? Because we all have, like, our little, if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to, but, like, what are some of the things you do when you're like, oh, I got to do some work, and you're, like, kind of stumped a little bit? Like, what are those things that help you out a little bit?
I get blocked, like, quite often. And it's been particularly bad, like, the past couple of years, just because, you know, multiple lockdowns. Mm. And so, like, all of your stimulation is sort of coming from the same source. I live in a very beautiful part of England, the Northwest. I love it here, but it's, I don't really want to live anywhere eventful, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I was saying to a friend, you know, just over about the kind of, you know, the past 5 years and, you know, what's kind of gone on. And it's, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, I remember sort of someone saying, you know, that may you live in interesting times is a curse. It's an old Scottish curse, right?
Yeah,
and, like, I never understood it until, like, the last 5 years. It's like, yeah, like, I, you know what, like, I don't need excitement. Like, excitement is drama, and I don't like drama, and I'm good, you know? Like, I just want everything, like, it's pathetic, and it won't happen, right? It won't happen, but I just kind of want everything to kind of calm down. So, like, I very deliberately found this kind of bolt hole somewhere very calm. So, you know, I don't have the same... I mean, I know, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, the animals that you deal with, I mean, they are obviously incredibly dangerous, but I can imagine that they are, that there's also a tranquility as well, because as long as, and I say this blithely as though I know what I'm talking about, but my assumption is that if one treats them with respect, you tend to make it through the day okay, right? Like, I mean...
I've walked around the mean crocodilian pens and the good crocodilian pens, and I've been able to chill there. Like, there is a... I don't think I've told this. We did a show, like, a whole, like... They know a presentation on conservation in Tucson, which is a city down southern Arizona and whatnot, with the sanctuary and whatnot. And we took baby, one of our alligators who was raised by people. I want to say her mouth was taped. And she, honestly, and it really makes you think a little bit, but her mouth was taped. I worked with her before. I did medical treatments on her before. She's around 6-7 feet long. You know, and she knows me. And so what happened was, you know, she was in the petting zoo. I was doing a presentation with her and be like, here's an American alligator. Here's all this. We got to know about them. They're dangerous animals. This one's okay because she was raised by people and such. And she's quote unquote people friendly, but her mouth is taped, so she's better. And what happened was that since she knows me and she was getting tired, it was the middle of the day, I'm sitting there crouched. She runs up and she pushes me over a little. I'm like, oh, shit. What happened, and I was like, uh-oh, it's like, she still got some power behind her. But then what she did is she, my legs were crossed when she pushed me down a little bit, and she set her head down, and I was like, okay, and I started petting her to calm her down, and then she just fell asleep, and she was asleep there for 10 minutes. And whenever I'd move, she'd get mad and come back to me, and then she'd be like, okay, I want to sit and lay and sleep, and she felt that comfortable. She put her head on my legs and fell asleep. Like, yeah, there is some tranquility with it. Like, there, you get those beautiful moments sort of thing like that, too. And that inspires you to do a lot of shit in life, let me tell you.
No, I can imagine. Like, I mean, it's I mean, knowledge of boundaries, I always imagine, is kind of paramount. Like, did you ever see that that Werner Herzog documentary, Grizzly Man? Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
I love it. Like, it's so fascinating to me just watching that, because, you know, I remember, like, I mean, he even kind of says it in the documentary, doesn't he? That, like, the Timothy Treadwell's footage tells you absolutely nothing about animal behavior and everything about human behavior.
This
horrible compulsion that we have to, like, I've got to touch it. Like, no, just leave it alone. Like,
yeah,
just let it be beautiful over there. You don't have to, like, get your head in it every time. You know what I mean?
There's a 100%. There was a thing where I was in the green anaconda pins, and both those girls, the guy and the girl combined, were not even combined. Like, I think they're both around 10, 11 feet.
Oh,
something like that. Yeah, right. And so, and, you know, we're sitting there, and I'm sitting in their pin. They're on a branch. One of them's on a branch above, and the other one's just chilling there too. And people are like, oh my God. And then, like, I'm just, and you know what? Like, I was going to take a picture and whatnot. And I was like, oh, I have an idea. And I went in my notes and I was editing comic book. I was editing notes on one of my comic series for SGGS Comics. And I was sitting there and I was like, oh, actually, that's a good idea. I should put it in a book. And I'm just sitting there chilling, just in there with them. And they're calm as can be. And one comes over and is like, hey, how you doing? And then just slithers away. And then just this car. And I'm like, God damn, I just edited a book while fucking just in this pen. I mean, but that's like the tranquility thing we're talking about. Like, I think whether you're an artist, writer, or an inker, or hell, even if you work in the arts but not in comics, you work in the film industry and stuff like that, I think, like, we all have these tranquility moments when we're a creator of anything that other people will look at and say, I don't know how the hell you do it. Like, I bet there's, like, it could be anything, really. Like, oh, I jam out to screamo music, and that's where I write my love story. Like, I've heard that before. I shit you not. And I read the love story, and it was beautiful. So, I think that's the key, is, like, we all have our little things that keep us sane as a creative, and our, like, our little environments that we put ourselves in, not long-term, but temporarily, to kind of help out.
I think that's very true. I mean, finding those kind of, it has been kind of, it's been difficult to find those oases, I guess, what we may for convenience term them, just because it's been so difficult to get kind of any kind of work life hygiene for the past couple of years, for obvious reasons, I guess.
By the way, we gotta admit something here, saying it's now been a couple years with the current couple, you know, lockdowns and shit like that, that hits a little bit, because I haven't thought about that. We're gonna be hitting the couple year thing going on here, like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, it's a whole other conversation, but I mean, I think we're on track for, like, actually, like, what pandemic cycles usually do, I think, pretty much. I don't know. I was lucky enough to get my booster. So, like, I think I'm, well, yeah, like, so, I mean, the way I figure it, like, don't get me wrong, you know, I'm still going to mask up and everything, but, like, I've been very, very careful for, like, a very long time, but I figured after the booster, really, that's, like, it's as good as it's ever going to get. You know what I mean? And it's kind of time to, like, shed my lockdown weight and, you know, get back out in the world and maybe cut my beard and stop looking like so. Do you know what I mean?
I got to say, your beard looks fantastic. Like, I got to say, don't cut it. Keep it.
I generally have it a bit more kind of groomed, you know what I mean? And, like, I tend to sort of take care of business a little bit more, but it's all got, like, horribly out of control, you know, we've all got an excuse, I think, this time.
Yeah, we all do. Oh yeah, that's it. But that's what I think it's been, like, it's been hell. We can't say it's not been for the past couple years with this stuff going on, especially if you live in America, you've been dealing with some stuff for the past 3-4 years, but, you know, we're at this thing now where I think as creatives, one, we've all been tested, and as people, we've all been tested. But I think really, like, it wasn't until I started, did some wildlife work beforehand, but I didn't get in the wildlife before the pandemic too much until, like, afterward or in the middle of it. And then, like, and then I'm still doing the creative stuff. Like, I was doing way more stuff in the film industry and stuff at the time, but then that went away. So, yeah, I had to adapt and evolve. So I think, honestly, you know, some of the good things could be, and this kind of ties in what you're saying there, is we've been tested a little bit here, but I think we really found out what's really important, who really matters, like, what you want to do with life, you know, how you find peace, because, and how you actually truly find peace, because you could do the temporary things of, you know, going to, we'll say, in your neck of the woods, going to the pub and stuff like that every few days or something, like, you know, we got that, oh, yeah, you know, we did this and such and such and such. But I think recently, in the past couple of years, like, we've been tested to find that thing that makes us peaceful and the thing that gives us tranquility a little bit, like, and the thing that kind of makes us happy in a way here. So, and honestly, I think proves and shows us what really matters in a way.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's funny, right? Because, I mean, I was talking to someone about it earlier on. It's going to be interesting to sort of see how the kind of employment situation shakes out after all this, because it's really interesting, man. Like, it seems to me, this is an exaggeration, but it's just how it seems to me. You know, there's like all of these, like, the big problem for the first time in, like, as long as I can remember, like, there are more jobs than job seekers for the first time. That's true in my country. It's true in your country, like, particularly in the sort of service industry. It's getting harder and harder to fill roles, and, you know, they're having to kind of like bump up wages and all this kind of stuff. And it was really interesting because, like, I was reading around it and I was talking to a friend of mine who's a historian, and he said, well, like, he said that this actually is something that happens kind of generally, like, after pandemics. And, you know, the time, you know, there's an argument. And by the way, like, where I am going with this is not like diseases are great. Yeah. Like, let me just say that, like, right off the bat, like,
really making it clear. Yeah,
absolutely. They're absolutely appalling. But an interesting thing that happens after pandemics is generally that, like, labor has more bargaining power because, like, there are fewer people. Right. So, like, after the Peasants' Revolt happened, apparently, like, after, you know, was basically an effect of the Black Death. It was like, you know, the farms needed laborers, and the laborers kind of went, well, like, we're going to need more money.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of happening now in a weird way. Like, it's like, I guess where I'm going with this is, like, I think this thing has changed the world in ways that we can't imagine yet. You know what I mean?
1,000%.
And the trauma as well. Like, I mean, I'm nowhere near ready to kind of deal with what's actually happened. You know what I mean? I can chew around it, but, like, you know, like, there are people in my life who aren't here anymore. I mean, I hope there aren't people in your life who aren't there anymore, but, like, I'd be surprised. Like, it's, yeah.
It's yeah, no, it's the number hit 5. And so, that was, it hit 5 last year, and including a little bit of this year. And I was like, oh my God. So it's like, yeah, I know, right? I get that, and it's, you're absolutely right. I can't, there's documentaries out now and I can't watch it, and I was like, I'm giving myself another 2 years.
No, of course, like, you know, like, it feels to me like, I mean, and you know, this is a speech to craft, I think, more than anything, because I suppose we should get to that sooner or later, but, like, it seems to me like, you need a visceral response to trauma. Don't get me wrong. Like, you do need a punk rock song, as it were, to kind of address the immediacy of a terrible situation. But then I think you start getting the really interesting stuff that is, for want of a better expression, like, medicinal, right? Culturally medicinal. Start getting that, like, decade hence. I mean, like, I find it real, like, it's super interesting that, like, you know, like, in the wake of, like, 9/11, like, it wasn't until it started, like, and I'm going to try and choose my words very carefully. It wasn't until it became eligible for metaphor that you started getting, that it started being kind of processed properly. You know what I mean? Like,
you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Yeah.
Like, until you can, you know, yeah, you know, you can deal with the kind of the thing itself, right? You can deal with the thing itself, but in the immediate aftermath of anything that has like very limited utility other than just like reliving a terrible thing. But then once things have had a while to kind of, you know, filter through the culture, you could start making things like Dark Knight. You know, Dark Knight is it's of course it's a 9/11 film. You know what I mean? It's absolutely it's absolutely in conversation with that. And you know, many others that I can't sort of put my finger on right now, but
War of the Worlds.
Spectacle thing. Yeah, absolutely, man. You're absolutely bang on. I think it isn't until you can address these things, I think, in metaphor that you can actually kind of hold them in your hand, you know, because otherwise they're just too big, you know, they're just too big. Metaphor, I think, is a process of miniaturization.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's where we come in as creatives, though. I really do. I think it's where we come in for it, because if you look at it, like, as creatives, like, you know, I'm, in the grand scheme of things, you know, I'm not, like, the big Brad Pitt or anything like that, too. Nor do I want to, because it seems like a hell of a life. I don't want to deal with that. And, you know, like, we as people who put stuff out there, I think it's almost like a thing where it's a process that we help move along. Because, I mean, what's the greatest way to treat, you know, trauma, to treat wounds and stuff like that, to treat the past couple of years of shit, you know, is entertainment. How do you cope better with a certain thing that's happened? And going back to that with, like, 9/11 and stuff, you know, how did we cope with it? We watched big flick action movies. And in some deep metaphysical way, it helped us. Fuck, the comic book industry, yeah, it's been weird and stuff like that too, but digital sales are still up. You got people going to comics like crazy now, even more so than when they were doing it in the movies, when the movies are coming out. You know, people are going to books more. People are going to the movies more, the TV shows. Like, I went, the first time we went after, you know, shots and all that stuff like that, to a Marvel movie, like, the Marvel logo appeared. It was for Black Widow, and everybody cheered just for that, to be like, holy shit, we got to this point here, at least in America, you know, we got to this point here where we can actually, and we are all masks and stuff like that too, unless you're eating popcorn, that whole shebang. And I think that's what helps us cope and whatnot too with it. Like, I don't know. I don't know about you, but maybe that's how I've been feeling about it. Like, it's almost like, you know, the work I've been doing has been affected by it. I don't know if the work you've been doing has been affected by it, to be like, let's make something pretty entertainable. Let's make something that can help out. Let's make something that can, you know, people can maybe relate to in a current state of mind with everything, but then help those in need.
I think, sorry to cut across, but like, I don't think it's avoidable, right? Like, I remember having a long conversation, you know, like I used to teach English Lit. Briefly and ingloriously. Ooh. But like, you know, one of the sort of big conversations that you'd always have, like, with kind of, you know, like, freshmen is subtext happens whether you want it to or not. Skill is making it conscious, but it's always there whether you want it to or not, you know. And by the way, like, I'm not cussing anything out in particular, but like, I'm just, you know, using examples like Transformers Dark of the Moon tells you as much about American culture as There Will Be Blood. The difference is one of them is trying to do that and the other one is doing that because it's a product of its time, right?
Yep.
And like I said, like, that, you know, I'm not being snooty. Like, you know, pop culture, I think, absolutely, if anything, it tells you more about, you know, prevailing kind of cultural assumptions. But I mean, in terms of sort of doing it consciously, which I think is the sort of responsible thing to do, I mean, the only thing I was going to kind of say is, I think what entertainment does is, I had long conversations with people about this, just in terms of like what constitutes technology. And like, if you ever get Simon Spurrier on, like I urge you to discuss the question of religion and technology with him, because he is fascinating. You can hold forth about this thing for hours and you're just riveted. But to me, technology is it's any kind of prosthesis that accelerates a process or brings something closer or pushes something further away. That's the function of technology. So language can technically be considered a technology because it brings things closer, right? Like it's the thing you want, you name it, right? The thing you don't want, you name. You know, this is how we apprehend and this is how we learn language. We name the thing that is lacking, right?
Yeah.
So to my mind, I think like culture is, as a culture, as a way of processing trauma, is almost like cooking. So, you know, why does cooking exist, right? Cooking exists because there are things that human beings with their actually like really rather shitty digestive systems can't digest unless some of the work of digestion is outsourced. So cooking is basically, it's chemical digestion, right? Like you, so everything you eat that's been cooked has basically been partially digested by chemistry. I think what culture does is it does that with its trauma. So, you know, the things that you consume as entertainment have basically been sort of cooked and then placed in front of you in a form that is now edible to you in a way that the thing itself was not edible. You see what I mean?
I know. Yeah. And I also see you're 1,000% better writer than I will ever be.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. But like that is, I never thought about it with cooking before. And I like that metaphor. I like that a lot. Like, because that's a simple way for people to understand it. I like that.
But like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, there are plants, man, that like, you know, unless they're properly cooked, they're simply inedible. Like, I think that's true of like cultural trauma, like in a way that like, you know, like Planet of the Apes, you know, dealt with, you know, huge civil unrest in the 60s. Like, how do we make that safe? We'll make it apes. And then all of a sudden people are ready to have that conversation in a way that they weren't before, because they can't deal with the thing itself because it's too big.
Oh, hell, X-Men. That was the big thing about it, too. Like that, 1,000% that, too, because of the same situation with that. Like, how do we tackle the current events here? Got it. Mutants. Like, you know this. And how are we going to have Martin Luther King Jr. and then Malcolm X? It's the biggest thing going on right now in our history and will be for a while. And it's like, Magneto and Professor X. Like, yeah, by the way, perfect idea there. But you're absolutely right. Like, it's a way forward. Like, it is a way forward. And I've told people this before, and I've said on a show, and I've said it in videos and interviews when people talk to me about stuff, is creativity is the best therapy.
Mm. Yeah. No argument here.
Like, you could doodle and you could feel better about yourself. Like, I got a guy named Carl at the Exotic Animal Hospital. Shout out to you. He's one of the techs. And he like, one of his things is, you know, like, we have some interesting days, especially in the vet field right now, because that's a whole other bucket of worms that the pandemic's affected. But, you know, we have some days. And what he'll do is, if it's a really long day, is we have a whole collection on a cork board in the break room, and we have some stuff on the computers. Is his creativity thing that he does is he draws SpongeBob doodles. He hand draws SpongeBob memes, and he makes his own thing with them tied into our field and such like that at the hospital. And like, that's like, and he feels so much better afterwards. I'm like, good on you, man. You know, that's his thing. Like, that's what he does.
When you have a bit of skin in that game, I think it always makes the product better. And it doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't matter whether it's kind of commercially viable or not. I mean, you know, there's a reason why, you know, like, you know, my wife teaches in a, you know, she's a teacher offenders, right? Mm-hmm. And the value of kind of creativity in the sort of learning process is just absolutely stratospheric. And like, you know, the sort of therapeutic effects, I mean, just incalculable. Like, it's funny, man. Like, because I always find that, like, with my stuff, unless I'm sort of, and this is going to sound really kind of pretentious, but it also happens to be true, so I stand by it. Like, it's always better when I'm speaking to a kind of personal experience. You know, and it doesn't matter whether it's a kind of corporate gig or a kind of creator-owned thing. Like, I just did like an Avengers thing. And like, that was, I don't, you know, I'm fair to be fair, I'll be open, you know, as a recovering alcoholic and like drug abuser, like that was why, you know, I wrote about Tony Stark really needing a drink. And the book is about him basically really needing a drink and how he responds to things out of his control as a trigger. And the reception is almost kind of immaterial because it felt good to write. It felt good. I'm in confessional mode. It's good to kind of unburden. And, you know, every now and then someone will kind of get in touch and say that it kind of spoke to them. And that's magic. That's magic. You know,
it makes it all worth it. It makes every single time, minute, second, hour, you know, the late nights, it makes it all worth it.
Oh, dude, like, I did a Swordsman one shot last year, like an Empire tie-in. And like the weirdest thing happened, man. Like, I remember, like, there was one scene that I wrote, and I just wanted it to, and I'd written this kind of screed, right? And in the end, like, it came to the final edit, and it was basically where this guy sort of merges with a tree while his son kind of looks on. I mean, it's all very kind of, you know, sci-fi inflected and everything. But like, all I had going through my head at the time was like my grandfather's death and like the waiting, you know, because he went very, very slowly. And I wrote it like that, you know. It was, you know, you're in this kind of forest setting, but it's also, you know, you peel it all away. It's a son stood by a hospital bed, right, basically. Mm-hmm. And I remember someone just reached out to me like a couple of weeks after it came out. You know, it didn't pop off or anything. You know, it wasn't a huge fanfare, but just this guy just reached out and just said like, I lost my mom this summer, and like this really helped me. And like, that's, you know, I mean, again, sorry to kind of stray into sort of pretentious territory, but like,
I'll say it's not pretentious at all. And nothing you've said is pretentious. I be honest.
It's the reason why we do what we do, right? It's like, but like, I remember like just sort of standing back and going like, oh shit. Like I communicated, like something I wrote, like, evoked something in someone. Like it's like a miracle, you know what I mean?
A thousand percent. I've gotten reviews about books from mine, like when my first ever comic book came out digitally. It was all like, it was through a social media thing and whatnot too, and it was the first thing like that teaser out there, and I shit you not, like the reactions in there, I cried, because it'd be like, the one of the comments was like, I've wanted to write for years. This is the thing that's now getting me to write as we speak. And that was a comment. Awesome. I'm gonna cry now. Like, and it's like a whole thing. Like, do we do it on purpose? No. That's the thing. Like, we do it not on purpose, but if it helps, it helps. Like, I think that's the thing that is like with almost anything anybody, like, especially writes, there is a thing with it of, it's therapeutic in some way. No matter what you're writing, there's something in there that's a piece of you. And you can be a writer for 50 years and you still add something new to it. That's a piece of you. Unless you're Stephen King. I don't know what he has left. But he writes so much fucking books. But
I think it's called Genius.
Yeah. That's honestly, yeah. It's 100% the world's smartest writer alive, Stephen King. It's a whole thing with it. Like, writing, it definitely is therapeutic. I've discovered that, like, I've got 7 books out right now. And, you know, we're about to release the whole website, print it and whatnot. So they're coming out pretty soon. And each issue has something, you know? Thank you. Each issue has something with it. Like, you mentioned with yours, like, each thing we do has something with it in there. Like, it's...
It's the difference, I think. I'm convinced that people can tell when there isn't something of you in there.
Because it's not personable.
Yeah, and to my mind, I'm in a writer's studio with Ram V, Dan Waters, Ryan O'Sullivan. Shit. We talk about this a lot. We talk about the concept of fan service, right, is very interesting to me because I think we agree notionally with the principle of fan service in the sense that fans deserve a level of service.
Yeah.
That is markedly different from giving everybody exactly what they've asked for. It's not the same thing. I think fan service is here is my compact with you, the reader. My compact with you, the reader, is that I am going to do I will fail sometimes because that's the nature of things, you know, and I'm not Stephen King. I'm not a genius. But I will always give you something of myself. There will always be, pardon the graphic image, but there will be, you know, there'll be some of my blood, sweat, and tears in there. That is how best I can serve you. I can't serve you by giving you exactly what your order is, but I can serve you by promising you that you will get the best of me every time. You know?
Because I think it's a respect thing. It's a respect to your, no matter what you're doing. I keep it all in the spectrum. There's a lot of people in the film industry who listen to this as well. It's a big thing of, if you create, you got to put in the respect to the viewer, the reader, you know, whatever it may be, the listener. I respect the listeners a lot. I always take their input in. You know, there's that. Whatever it is, you got to respect it because with the blood, sweat, and tears you put in, they're also putting it into your thing. Well, Sigma Comics with this one, they got to work to get the fucking money, you know? Like, that's the thing. Like, if they're paying for this, they have put in their blood, sweat, and tears with whatever job they're doing. And, you know, unless they're spending daddy's money, in which case, dad, you know, there is that too. Blood, sweat, and tears of asking mom for the $4. But if you're like a young teenager or something.
Do you feel that more acutely in comics than anything else? Because I do.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's so weird, man. Like, the economics of anything is vulgar, but you know, it does sort of, I think, pay to, but like, one of the things that kind of hit me about you know, there is absolutely a place for like decompression, right? Like, you know, the dominant storytelling that sort of prevailed from sort of 2000 to like 2010. And then, you know, like Hawkeye happens and then all of a sudden it's kind of, you know, grids and compression and what have you. And less of a focus on spectacle, I guess. But one of the things that I found really interesting is that it almost hit at the same time that we sort of nudged past the kind of $3 limit. And I think that there is a sort of psychological barrier where, like, I mean, I get this just pure brute kind of, you know, dollars and cents, man. Like I don't know whether you feel the same way, like, but like if someone's going to pay like $4 when they could pick up like an airport paperback for $8 that will entertain them for literally hours. Why should someone pay $4 unless the thing that I'm giving them either is dense enough that it rewards reading? I don't think they're mutually exclusive. Both rewards an initial read and is a, you know, a first pass nourishing read, but also rewards multiple readings. Because unless it's, you know what I mean? Because like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a lot. Like, oh, and especially if you're doing just a trade paperback and it's like, oh, all my books are being released on trade paperback. And that's the first thing that comes out for the series. Fuck yeah, because that's $20. And if it's a hardcover, like, oh, coming out only in hardcover, this new series, and it's like, that's 30 to 35. And then if you're in Canada, you're extra screwed. But, you know, like, that's the thing. Like, it's, it goes back to that respect, because you got to respect the people, huh?
They're free healthcare. It's, it, it all evens out.
That's, yeah, that's true. But, you know, like, that's, it's this whole respect thing with it. That's it goes back to that. Like, you gotta, if they're paying the money, like, comics aren't 50 cents anymore. $4 is, yeah, and people are like, oh, you spend the money on the books and one on two. And, like, is there some books out there that are not worth the $4? Yeah. Is there some, like, books out there that are not worth $8? Yeah. Is there some movies that aren't worth seeing in theaters, but they are maybe on DVD? Yeah. You know, as a guy who watches a lot of B movies, yeah, pretty much. But, you know, like, it's there's some movies here, like, I don't know about going to the movie theaters for that one. But, you know, there is the thing about it, like, it is that respect in there. Like, you got to put the love and effort in there, because they're putting the love and effort. Fuck, they're paying the gas money to go pick up the thing if they're getting it in person. They're paying the internet costs to read the thing digitally. It's it. And I don't mean to toot our own horns here. The people who may be like, oh, these people, comics, but. You know, working in a comic book industry is a whole feat its fucking self, you know? It really is. No matter how big of a name you are.
I mean, this is a whole kind of a conversational side quest, but my dad is doing, like, you know, like, I'm a second generation, like, comic guy. Like, my dad got me into them, right? And like, he just, like, he picked up, like, a Marvel Unlimited subscription and has basically spent the last year, like, reading Marvel comics.
Oh, God, like, that's a lot. So
soup to nuts, like, the whole thing, like, chronologically. Oh. Which is great, because, like, whenever I kind of pick up a Marvel gig, like, he's my, like when I was doing all the kind of Steve Englehart stuff for, like, for Empire, like, he was like the guy. Like, I just ring him up, go, Dad, like, you know, which issue did, like, the Celestial Messiah first appear in? Oh, well, you know, which version do you mean? Do you mean, like, you know, the sapling version? You know, it was great. Or the seedling version, or do you mean, like, the fully mature version? You know, it was just great just to have that.
And resource. He's more nicer than the internet will ever be to you when you're asking his question.
Yeah. But he pointed something out to me recently that blew my mind, which is you know, on the sort of the question of, you know, like, the sort of the physics, or not the physics, but like the sort of the physical, what we consider to be like the Platonic ideal of the comic, right? Marvel Comics number one came out 1939, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think it cost?
Oh, especially for Marvel number ones.
Marvel Comics number one, like, 1939. Guess how much do you think it cost?
I'll say it in dollars. Probably 400,000.
No, like at the time.
Oh, at the time. Oh, I thought you meant now. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, at the time, 5 cents.
10 cents.
Pence.
So,
oh, shit.
10 cents. So, the Marvel Comics number one, 1939, 10 cents. Fantastic Four number one, 1961. How much do you think that cost? So,
$1.50. So, $1.50. 10 cents?
So, for 22 years, comic books were 10 cents. And it wasn't until, like, the mid 60s where basically they started raising the price. And I think, like, you know, it really kind of, you started dealing with, like, multiples of, like, I mean, you know, 20, you know, 12 cents, 25 cents, 50 cents, you know, as you kind of hit, and then, like, it really kind of kicks off, like, as you enter, like, the Reagan era. And then you're up to like $1, and then you're like, when I started picking them up, they were like $1.99. That was like 1991. But what's interesting is that like they were always, it was considered really important to like keep them as like a paper round proposition. You know what I mean? Like it was something that you would go to the drugstore and pick up off the spinner rack, and it had to be that 10 cent threshold because like 10 cents is pocket money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was like, because they knew you could grab it at that point. Like it was like, here, you know, everyone's got this amount of money. So at least hopefully, like you can just take it up and pick it up. And it's equal opportunity for everybody to get it.
But what they did was over time to keep it at that 10 cent threshold, they just reduced the page count.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So what I find really interesting is like, you know, we have this idea that there's this like platonic ideal, right? Like that the ideal comic is 22 pages, 20 pages, 22. Some people would say the sweet spot is 22. But like when you actually like dig into the history, like that, the reason there are 22 page comics is pure economics. It's nothing to do with it being like an optimal unit of like storytelling. It's pure, it's an accretion of like paper shortages, the oil shock, Reaganomics, the crash of 2008, all of these things conspire to kind of create what we may for, you know, what we consider to be like this kind of supposed like ironclad standard. I don't know, like I find that fascinating, man, that like there are so many people like, no, 22 pages like absolutely ideal, but like that's just money. It's just money.
I think it's because of evolution and adaptation to it, I think. It's because like, oh, they're like, well, it's always been that when I've been around in the business for like younger or middle-aged folks working in it, and they're like, oh, it's been 22, and that's how they learned it. And they're like, no, you can't. It's that whole learning thing, and you can't change, sort of thing like that. But that's the thing. It's like they didn't know either. I'm finding this out now, and I've been a fan of comics for many, many, many years, and I'm an historian sort of guy. So, shit, I'm like learning this. But
like for 22 years, they were 10 cents. Like literally a generation was 10 cents. Like that's unheard of.
Yeah,
I've seen it go. I've like literally since I've been collecting, like I've seen it go from like $2 to $4. Like they've doubled since I started, you know. But like 22,
there's nothing else that works like that. There's nothing. Past 22 years, every since it's gone up, there's been nothing that stayed the same. Even Tootsie Rolls have gone up. Like one Tootsie Roll used to be like a penny or some shit. Now it's like 75 cents or a dollar, and I'm like, oh, you can get out of Dodge. Get out of here. oh my god, and I was a kid who had it was like, oh, it's a quarter, or it wasn't even a quarter, it was like, yeah, 10 cents for a Tootsie Roll. I'm like, all right. And now as I'm kids like, hey, you got a dollar for one Tootsie Roll? I'm like, one Tootsie was a dollar. What is going on? What is this world? That's what, when a Tootsie Roll is $5 for a single one, we have failed. Something is bad. Something is really, really bad in the world.
Wasn't there like a thing like where like the guy, like there was the guy who kind of came in to try and like adjust, like the only other thing that's like held its price is like the Costco hot dog, like the Costco hot dog.
Oh my god, like yeah, but that's not been 22 years. There's no way that's been 22 years.
No, it's been, I think it's been $1.50 since 1985. And like my understanding is that like there was a marketing guy who kind of came in and went, guys, I've got a great idea. We'll put it up to $2. Like he was fired immediately.
Like, I remember this. Like, yeah, that's right. They're like, get out of here. They're like, you idiot. We're going to go bankrupt because of this.
It's $1.50, but it costs us money. I don't care.
That's the most American thing of all time is we can't raise the price of a hot dog. Everything else can rise up.
Well, like, no, I mean, but using that as a loss leader, like that's actually, I think that's super smart. And by the way, like, I will say, like, you know, I know, like, both our respective countries are, like, going through some stuff right now. Mm-hmm. But, like, infinite refills in American diners is the most civilized gesture in human history.
I did not know where that was going. I did not expect that. Like, really?
Like we don't have it. Like literally, like if you want to sit like anywhere in the UK, like if you want to sit and just like do some work, like in, you know, in a cafe or something all day, like it'll cost you like 20, 25 pounds, you know, it'll cost you like 35 bucks.
Oh yeah.
But like every time I've been to the US and I've gone to a diner and it's like, you know, you get a cup of coffee and it's like, you know, kind of top you off. Yeah. Okay. And then I'm expecting to get like a check. No. And I'm just like, man, this is so civilized.
This is the modern world. This is the future. It's unlimited refills.
But like, what a beautiful thing.
You're not just wrong. Like, you're right.
Like it's fantastic.
But then next thing you know, you're addicted to coffee. Oh,
I've been addicted to way worse. Come on.
That's honestly, yeah, from what you said before, yes. But it's the most beautiful thing I've heard in a while. It's like,
but like, it's a beautiful thing. It's beautiful.
You're right. You are right. I think what a lot of people right now probably are learning that other countries don't have unlimited refills. Like in the UK, that would pop. People are like, "Oh my god!" I bet you there's a good percentage of the listeners right now that are like, "Holy crap!" Like they don't have unlimited refills.
Yeah,
but like, they're also thinking that's how you guys stay so skinny.
We're absolute savages.
Those guys are living in third. They are definitely a third world countries over there in London. Why? Well, you know, not unlimited refills. And those guys are roughing it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I want somebody to make fan art of that. It's just like, there's somebody, please. It's like someone make an artist rendition of like. No unlimited refills means like just make a comic of it, please.
Yeah, that's definitely my career trajectory.
Is unlimited to make sure your country has unlimited. Wherever you move, it has to have unlimited refills. Hey, that's not. I mean, you know what? You got a long day going on or anything? I know you're not moving to Florida or Arizona, so I know that's for a fact. Like, if you move somewhere like where it's chilly and such, of course, which isn't bad. You know, the good parts of Canada, pretty good. And then if you go somewhere like that or like the northern U.S., if you want to move to crazy country, then hey, you can go into a diner. You know, it's been a long day, been shoveling the snow. You come into a diner, they're like, oh, you know, and you get unlimited amounts of coffee in there, and you just get to sit and relax with some friends, family, or maybe you want to type up something. And you're just snowing all around you. You get unlimited coffee and such. That's that right there, tranquility and bliss.
100%. You know, because you know, keeping weird hours. Like every now and then, like I'll see, like you know, like I'll be sort of up and sort of about my day, but I'll see like an update from like Sabella or someone, you know, who's just like, it's midnight in Portland, and he's just like he's like in a diner just working, and it like. I don't know, man. Like there is an undeniable sort of Hopper-esque romance to that I can never kind of quite shake. You know what I mean?
Oh, 1,000%. And you know, there's a thing. Oh, I wish I could remember who it was. I'm drawing a blank, and he's gonna kill me because I know he still listens. I'm drawing a blank on the name. It was also a guy who worked with, did some stuff for Marvel and DC and stuff like that back when. This was a couple years ago. And he told me, do you know of, we're a little over the hour mark, but I got to tell this.
I apologize, sorry.
No, it's okay. I didn't look at the time. I was like, oh, Lord. But there was a thing. Do you know of a place in America called Waffle House?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, do you know the legendary things of Waffle House? Of like, you get a not-so-friendly crowd coming in the later days or later hours of the day and such?
No, I do not. I'm unaware of their reputation. Were they not on like a Bourdain or something? And like he was saying, this is the best food in the world, kind of thing.
I remember that. Yeah, that was the thing. And you know, Waffle House food is good. But there's a thing where if you go Waffle House 24 hours, if you go there at like midnight and you're in a city, right? Let me tell you, I do not. Once it hits a certain hour, if the sun goes down, I don't go to a Waffle House. But he would go there because he would meet all sorts of characters. And he's like, I'd be like, really? You Waffle House? He's like, yeah. he went there because at Waffle House around that time, if you're in the city, you'll find hookers, you'll find hard drug dealers and people doing drugs in the Waffle House. You'll find people coming in with like guns shooting up the place. You'll find people coming in like wandering in from bars. You'll find, not to be mean to the people wandering from bars, we've all done that, but like you find like very like unsavory members in there, and you know, a lot of like tweakers and such like that. You'd find like a lot of the stuff, and he would go in there and he's like, I'm gonna draw, because he's an artist, and he's like, I'm gonna draw a waffle. I'm like, why do you go there? He's like, you know how many fights I've seen at Waffle House? He said, I've seen so many at Waffle House. I've seen some people start screaming and arguing. He said, I've seen some people do some crazy thing, walk in boxers, or some people walk in nude. And he's like, you know, let me tell you, that's helped out a lot in the drawing process. It's like,
circling back around to that kind of question of inspiration, man. Like, I remember like a couple of years ago, like I went out to, like I was out in LA for some stuff. And Rob Williams was there.
Oh,
so, like we got taken out by a friend of ours to this place called Cantor's, which is, it's awesome. Like they filmed a bunch of Mad Men in it. Like it's this like awesome Jewish deli that does these like Rubens, like the, you know, like the Rubens that are like the size of like a basketball, and they're just, yeah, the most delicious we've ever had. Like they're incredible. But like there's like a bar in the back that's kind of real like awesome sort of like sleazy 1980s get herpes from the toilet seat kind of like like LA kind of like Guns N' Roses kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember like I was staying out, and like Rob had a flight the next day, and like I've never seen, like, he just shared this meaningful glance with me. He was like, are you coming back to the hotel? And I was like, no, I think I'm going to stay out for a bit, man. And he just looked at me, Alex, if you stay out, and he just whispered, you're going to have an adventure.
Yes.
Like, what do you mean? He goes, an adventure.
That's like a whole thing where you're like, I want to do this, but then I don't want to do this. Like, what are you like?
But there was like in the back, but like I don't want to see the dirt. You know what I mean? I want to see the dirt.
Yeah, you don't want to. No. And especially LA, that's a whole different bucket of worms. Like that. Oh God, that's like, oh, what happened? Oh, I went to like Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan. You know, I went to the Bronx.
Oh, dude, Hell's Kitchen is like super, super fancy now.
It is nowadays, but like I'm talking like 90s, like, you know, or like you're going to Manhattan in 97 and you're just like, yeah, I'm going to stay out. But dude, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Stay out for a little bit.
There was a whole thing, like I remember like my mom showed me like there was some, you know, when like after she passed, like someone put up like there was some, like there's an amazing photo shoot that Carrie Fisher did in the middle of Manhattan, and it was like around about the time of Star Wars and everything, and it's basically like, you know, her like laughing but like in like a garbage can like in Fifth Avenue or something. And like I just remember, like I was talking to my mom about it, and my mom was like, Jesus, like how brave must you have been to like jump inside a garbage bin like in like 1976 New York? Like,
I mean, oh my God, the cojones are insane. Oh my God. In fairness, it's Carrie Fisher, and she was a brave woman. She was a very brave woman indeed.
I mean, the bravery is like undeniable, but like, my God, like, I mean, you know, like, you know, I grew up in London, man. Like, I mean, London has, yeah, but like, like my understanding is that, like, you know, mid-70s New York was like no joke.
Oh no, it was not. Oh yeah, it was insane. Oh, Chicago, New York. Oh my God, yeah. Like I hear the stories from my dad when he grew up in Illinois too. Like it was, oh no, he didn't mess with those. It was like the three cities you just avoid: Manhattan, Chicago, and LA. And you're like, I'm good. we're gonna go for a couple hours and we're out. Oh man,
I love. Like I've only been to Chicago once, but like I'm desperate to get back.
It's a beautiful city. People don't give it enough credit. But it
was, like it's like the whole time, like don't get me wrong, like there are flashes, right? But like,
yeah,
you always kind of look for the kind of analogs, right? So like when I was in New York, and I've been in New York a bunch of times, and the whole time I'm going like, oh, like there's like a, you know, like, I get it. Like, okay, there's like a bit of Gotham. Like, there's a bit of Gotham. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's a bit of Gotham. And that, you know, they, and like, it wasn't until I was like in Chicago where I was like, oh, this is Gotham, right?
Okay. Yeah, yes, 100%.
The Opera House and stuff. Like, yeah, that's just Gotham. Like,
yeah. Just, oh, yeah. You look at the old school architecture, it's Gothic. And it's, yeah, it's Gotham. There's, that's why they filmed the Christian Bale movies there, one and two. Like, there's no, it's, especially how bad crime was, it was 100% Gotham.
Yeah, way more than New York.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People are like, New York's Gotham. Like, fuck you. You never went to Chicago. You've never been.
Yeah. Like, I got a really cool tour. Like, do you know Elliot Ray Hall?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, good friend of mine. Like, I've been there for like a week or something. And like, he just, like, he's such a cool guy. He was like, right, I'm going to pick you up. And he's like, I used to be a Chicago tour guide. So, like, I'm going to show you like all the cool stuff. And like, the guy just like spent the whole day like just driving me around Chicago, and he's like, there's a Picasso, and like there's like the oldest non-steel structured skyscraper in the world, and like, just, he's just a fascinating guy, man, but just, you know, really kind with his time.
Very nice. I mean, yeah, it's got to be like, that's a whole other conversation too. That is about Chicago and its beauty. Oh, it is. Oh, it, well, 100%.
Exquisite, man. Absolutely exquisite. Like, I mean, it's not that I wasn't kind of expecting it, but like, it was just like super weird to have that thing of just like, all right, like, this is just like, it just is Gotham City, like 100%.
We got to keep that alive because people keep it like, Chicago's not, oh, we got to keep it alive. Now, Alex, I don't want to take too much more of your time today, good man, because we were almost at an hour 10. I didn't realize the time went so fast. And I was not looking at it. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, I apologize, man. Like, I warm to a theme and then talk around it.
Don't apologize. This has been, you've taught me stuff, which I love when that happens.
And, same.
Oh, I'm glad I could teach you some things, too. Like, this has been a wonderful conversation.
Thanks, man. No, likewise. Sorry I didn't talk about comics too much, but like, I want to talk more about rattlesnakes, you know?
Hey, if you ever got anything, I mean, you got, message me on Twitter or anything like that too and such. Like, I'll send you some stuff or whatnot. Like, shoot, I'll send you a rattlesnake rattle. I'll send you a carrot. It's on record. I'll do it. Some friends of mine, I send some stuff out to every now and then. I'll send you crocodilian teeth if you want it.
Binding, yeah.
Huh?
I believe podcasts are legally binding.
God, if that's the case, we're all in trouble. But there are some people who are definitely in trouble. But yeah, I mean, to me, they are. But I mean, yeah, message me on Twitter. I'll send you some rattlesnake stuff if you want, like rattlers, crocodilian teeth, snake skin, anything like that. If you're like, I kind of like, it'd be interesting one. I'm like, yeah, I'll send you some stuff.
That would be amazing. Thank you so much.
Of course, yeah. Just let me know when you want it and such. Where can people find you on social media and check out some of your stuff? Because, of course, we got to do that promotion sort of thing.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Like, this is the end of, like, the hot ones thing. Where...
Yeah. It's a little bit, but you can actually speak and you're not crying.
Yeah. What have you got going on in your life? All right. Yeah. So I just had an Avengers one shot, which was a tie-in to the death of Doctor Strange. It was... I'm very proud of it. I've got a Spider-Man one shot dropping in December, which is a tie-in to Darkhold. And like, if any of you have been reading any of the Darkhold one shots, it's sort of in a similar vein. It's kind of what you're seeing is effectively like what our heroes have been reading in the Darkhold, right? So yeah, so like, I mean, the way I kind of approached it is like, it's a sort of horror what if, and like, I got to go to some really, really horrible places with that. So like, if any of you guys are into, like, you know, Todd McFarlane, you know, Torment, like the kind of horror inflected Spider-Man stuff, I think you might dig it. I got a bunch of other stuff dropping that I really can't talk about, but it's quite exciting. I'm working on some horror stuff of my own.
Very cool.
I got an yeah, like I mean, I've got a very good relationship with a company called TKO, and a trade has just dropped called Tales of Terror, which contains two stories by me, full length one shots. There's one called Hand Me Down that I did with Jen Hickman, and another one called Roof Stompers that I did. I did with Ian McEwan. They're both extremely beautiful. I think that's about the size of it, really.
Cool. Where can people find you at on Twitter and social media and stuff?
They can find me at Alex Patnadel. I know my surname is deeply unwieldy. It's it's AlexPaknadel. I'm always sort of wandering around on there. Alternatively, I am on Facebook, but like I don't like it so much.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of rough. But apart from that. You can probably, I really should get on something else, shouldn't I?
I'd say you're good, to be honest. Like, that's the whole thing and a half. Like, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I always feel like with these, I used to spend like a lot more time on there than I do. And then I remember like a friend of mine just said, like, why are you a Twitter employee? Like, what are you talking about? It's like, you're literally working for them for free. Like, you're literally like, you're giving content to their platform for nothing. The only thing you get is like this weird hit of dopamine, like whenever anyone sort of says that something you've said is like cool. Like, that's
God, that's a good way to put it. Oh my God.
You just get this like shitty, like neurochemical reward that isn't worth anything.
Oh my God, that shit.
you're an unpaid employee of like social media platforms, man. Like,
I'm questioning everything.
Well, you know, my work here is done.
I've learned things and I question everything.
Yeah, and like I definitely like won't antagonize a rattlesnake, like, which to be honest is hugely disappointing, because like that's my evening plans, like, bund.
I mean, okay, if you ever come to Arizona, let me know. I will let you pet an alligator.
Like will bad things happen?
No. Or hold a giant python or anaconda, man. No.
Okay.
You have my word.
Okay, cool. Like, yeah, no, I'm into that. Like, here's the thing as well, like, sorry, absolute non sequitur. Like, I've handled snakes before and they're like really nice to handle. Why do people feel weird about handling snakes and not weird about handling birds? Because birds are gross. Like, unpleasant.
I mean, as a guy who's had handled a hawk before, or an eagle and a hawk before, let me tell you, yes.
Birds do not feel nice, man. Like, snakes feel like they're warm and everything, and like
it's a thing where it doesn't have legs or arms, so it scares people. It's scales. That's all it is.
Yeah, but like this, do you know what I mean? I don't know.
100%. No, I know what you mean. Oh, I 100% know what you mean. Like, I 1,000% know what you mean. Like, I prefer working with reptiles all the time compared to stuff like, because they're all a lot better. You know, they're a hell of a lot better.
They're clean.
Like, yeah. You know. Yeah. Way more than other things.
Why have a bath when you could just like slough your skin off? Like, that's as clean. That's as clean as it gets.
It's very true. God damn it. If people didn't learn anything from this episode, I can't help them in life. Well, thank you again, Alex, for coming on to the show. The offer still stands, man. I'll send you some stuff and whatnot. You rock, brother. You really do. You're welcome back anytime.
Oh, thank you so much. And yeah, please do. You know, let's do a cultural exchange. Please have me on at some point in the future, and I promise I'll be more focused. Sorry, like it's been a day.
No, but it's okay. I understand. And let me tell you, there's a quote I say in the show, like, it's a comic book podcast. We talk 10% comic stuff and then 90% other things, and everybody loves it. So I'm not worried.
All right, appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Of course. You rock.